based on the idea that there's bound to be at least 16 people who are better than this particular guy. The Father's Day story that comes back into my head over and over again, and I want to say this morning, I've been needing to say this for a while. If I share a story that I've shared before, like last week, the days of my brain slipping are upon me, so please forgive me and remind me afterwards. This is one I know I've shared before. It was a Father's Day. I'm probably about 8 or 9 years old, and I go to my dad and say, "There's a Mother's Day and there's a Father's Day. When is Kids Day?" And I can remember my dad through clenched teeth saying, "Every day is Kids Day." Didn't really know what he meant at that particular point in time. I thought it all through and decided that Christmas was Kids Day. But as you go through fatherhood, you start to understand that just a little more. And I really tried to look and think, what did dads need the very most? Another tie, perhaps some more recognition. But from a spiritual standpoint, I would put forward this morning that what dads need the most is wisdom. There are so many situations where wisdom is just absolutely critical. God allowed Solomon to choose. What do you want? Solomon said, "I want wisdom." And we know that not long after that, he was brought this terribly complex situation involving two women and one surviving child. And Solomon says, cut the baby in half, knowing that that'll provoke the kind of response that he's trying to provoke. And we look at that and we say, this guy is brilliant. And he was. It was a brilliant answer. The unfortunate part of that is the modern day father needs almost that level of wisdom. The life is complex, and raising of children is a very difficult thing to do. So this morning I'd like for us to think about wisdom. We're going to look at a passage from James chapter 3, verses 13 and 18. I think probably before we begin, we maybe need to refocus on the idea that, you know, sometimes the dad is thought to be the less emotional of the two. Mom is the emotional person and dad is the more of the analytical person. Maybe the better description, that at least in our practice, is that dad is the enforcer and mom is the nurturer. And while that might be useful for us and beneficial in terms of keeping the boundaries drawn, I think that's really a big mistake. I think that God intends for both of us, both marriage partners, to be nurturers. And there are times when both marriage partners have to be the enforcer. And this morning, I'd certainly think that the place that wisdom begins is maybe re-examining that situation. But we're going to look at James chapter 3, verse 13. The interesting thing about this is where I was headed anyway. In fact, I wasn't going to do this on Father's Day because I did two out of one lesson, and so it threw me off track. But as I sat with this material, I thought, this material fits dads perfectly. And so I want to share it with you from that perspective. Verse 13 through 18 of James chapter 3. "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such, quote, wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reach a harvest of righteousness." James here is contrasting two different types of wisdom. He literally is going to show us the extremes of earthly wisdom versus heavenly wisdom. And he tries to help us understand that. He tries to define that just a little bit. And what he's going to do in both circumstances is to use key descriptive words For the second one, he's going to use a list, but there's key descriptive words here. And the first thing he really attacks is this envy and selfish ambition. Now, how in the world would that apply to a father? Well, is it possible that a father could be envious of those without a family? Envious of those who are not in the stressful situation that he is in? Maybe as he looks at his own life and his own leadership position, he says, you know, I would be so much better off if I was in this position or that position. Is it possible as a father to envy the people in your family? They've got it easier than I do. They have a simpler time than I do. Could you be envious of your own children? They get all of the wife's time. And those kind of things can set up. Those kind of things can begin to start and rear their heads in very positive but very practical kinds of ways. I want to say personally and share this from my heart, marriage is difficult during the child-rearing years especially. That's the point in time where so much is pulled out of that relationship between those two people. And that's why it's a great idea that if you're married and you don't have children yet, that working on that relationship is so, so critical, because there's going to come a time when there's going to be a lot of stress there. The opportunities during child rearing for husbands and wives to maybe be away or to involve themselves in efforts that increase and improve the relationship are very, very important, because it takes a lot out of that relationship. It's very hard at some points in time. James is talking about earthly wisdom. And sometimes that earthly wisdom is just, as he says, unspiritual and of the devil. And I would suggest this morning very, very carefully that when we get to that place as fathers where we've decided that a harsh manifestation of power and authority is our role and our responsibility, that we've moved into that area and we need to back up just a little bit. Sometimes it's earthly because it's misapplied. The other day I was in Walmart. That's where I spend most of my life. If I go to the store, it's going to be Walmart. And there was a lady talking on her cell phone to somebody, obviously, in her family, and they were talking about a child problem. And she said, well, what you need is to apply some of that positive enforcement. And I wanted to say, that's reinforcement. You know, you've misused it just a little bit there, and so it's kind of wiggled away from you. Sometimes we give too much regard to the people of the world. There are a number of educated, skilled, effective communicators out there who are telling us how to raise our children. And some of them are very, very helpful to us. They really are. I know that when our first child was born, we kind of sat and looked at each other and I'll explain more about this as I go along. Our knowledge base consisted of our two families, how to parent. And the way that we would have done that is to look and say, well, I know what my family was like and you know what your family was like. And our first response to that is, I don't want to do that. That's not the direction that I want to go. Where do I go next? And I say that because I've talked with my family about that, and we've been pretty open about that. My dad especially shared a lot of things about the regrets that he had in terms of being a dad and being a father. But we would reach out to books. Dare to Discipline by James Dobson was one of the most supreme books in the 1970s for how to raise children. And it was a great help. We read a book called Train Up a Winner by Hilary Motzinger, and it was a great help. But there were times when those guys were wrong. Now, maybe not wrong for everybody, but they were wrong for us. They didn't give us the right advice. Now, they had great ideas, and they had great strategies, and they had interventions, and they had all these kinds of things, many of which were quite useful and quite helpful. But bottom line is, You're shaping heavenly beings. And as parents, as fathers, that's our goal. We don't want to raise kids who are just successful in this life. We want to raise those people who belong to God, who are going to experience what God has in mind for them. They're going to capture what God has planned for them. And they're going to be the people that go home to be with God. And so earthly wisdom falls short of doing that. James knows that because he says, okay, let me tell you about heavenly wisdom. So we switch from earthly to heavenly. And what's the advice that he's going to give? The advice consists simply of a list of words. But so let's look at those words and think about them. He says, first of all, that heavenly wisdom is pure. You know, you hear often that people see God the way they see their heavenly Father. And sometimes that's a real positive and sometimes it's not. We know that as we look at our earthly fathers, we're kind of transferring some qualities into God-like situations. And the better that situation is, then the easier it works at some point in time. But the reality is, excuse me, God's motives are always pure. He always wants what's best for us. He always is going to do what's right for us. He always is going to teach us the right thing. And so if earthly father is trying to raise a heavenly child, his motives are going to be pure, if at all possible. How about peace loving? Dad's not looking for conflict. He's looking to promote peace. Again, I'll share from my own family with understanding that my parents know fully how I feel about this. My siblings and I didn't fight. We did not conflict. The reason was simple. We didn't want to wake the beast. If Dad was in a good mood, the last thing you wanted to do was to mess that up. It didn't matter if you wanted a candy bar, you wanted this and that. It was very simple to understand. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who were raised here in the 50s who had that similar kind of experience. You know, Dad was just kind of the lion who stalked about. Everybody was afraid of him. And if he went back in his lair, then you'd leave him there. You know, you didn't want to bring any problems to him at all. That was only going to make life more difficult. The opposite is what the truth is. We all need a place of refuge. We need a place that's safe. We need a place that's peaceful. And often mom is shifted the responsibility of creating a peaceful, safe place. But dad has this responsibility as well, not working against each other, but working together so that the kids feel good about home. It's a wonderful and it's a good place to be. The next word is considerate. Dad is considerate? I thought people were supposed to be considerate of dad. No. Dad's offering just the common courtesies of life, simply choosing to show some respect. And as we know, that's the way we get respect back, is that we share it and that we give it. How about submissive? Well, the father's not supposed to be submissive to the children. But think about that for just a minute. How much of dad's role is being submissive? Well, what does he do with the money that he earns? Does he keep it to do whatever he wants to do and to entertain himself? No, he submits his own desire, places it beneath his personal desire, is placed it beneath the needs of the family. He puts that money there so that the family can be provided for. His comfort, if there's a threat to the home, dad's going to be the guy who's going to step to the front, literally at times risking his own life. Why would he do that? Because he's submitting to the family's needs above his own. He'd risk his own life to protect and save that family if he could. Excuse me. There was a famous speaker by the name of Jack Paul. And again, this was back in the 70s. And he was talking about he had accused his 3-year-old of doing something they didn't do. I found out later that he was in the wrong. So he said he got down on his knees, he got eye to eye with the child and said, "I was wrong and I'm sorry." And he said, "You know, that's where I needed to be. That's what I needed to be doing. I needed to lower myself to that place. I needed to say to that child, I was wrong, forgive me." Because I didn't want that to be the way that things continued. Mercy. Can you remember the times your father showed mercy? My guess for most of us is that we would remember those times of being shown mercy far more than we would remember the times of punishment. They were unique and they were special. That was that moment when you knew that Dad really cared about you, that he was interested in your best. He was trying to move you in a positive direction, because there are times when mercy is appropriate, just as God's mercy toward us is appropriate. Good fruit, the manifestation of the things that occurred. There's nothing any more fun than sitting around in a family thinking about all of the good times that took place. I was with my sister and brother recently, and my brother-in-law, as you know, passed away a few years ago. We were talking about my brother-in-law. When my brother-in-law was first in college, he borrowed my dad's chainsaw. He and my sister were engaged at the time. He didn't ask my dad if he could borrow his chainsaw. He just came by the house and picked it up. And my dad would say, "Jeff, I need my chainsaw back." Okay. Finally, one day, it was a Sunday, it was at lunch, and Dad said, "Jeff, I want the chainsaw back today. You know, before this afternoon is over, bring me my chainsaw back." And Jeff called my dad Chief, and he said, "Chief, you're going to be needing a new chainsaw." Everybody just, and my siblings hadn't ever heard that story before, and it was just really fun to talk about those kind of stories. And then that led to more stories and more stories, and it just flows. Precious memories flood over you. And when you first lose somebody, as you know, you're maybe not real happy telling those stories. But as the years go by, those stories become so impressive, and they become so useful. And that's the fruit of good life. If you looked at Hilary Motzinger, as I mentioned earlier, his parental structure has four pieces. And one of those pieces is a thing called esprit de corps, the spirit of the corps. And he's very heavy on, you don't just do the technical things, you do the fun things as well. And those are the things that you remember. When you sit back in the quiet times, you say, "I remember Dad doing that. And it was so much fun." Impartial. Is that a challenge? Is it hard to treat each of your children totally, objectively, fairly? Why is it so difficult? Well, they're not the same people. I was talking to a person not too long ago, and she was sharing her frustration at when the grade cards would come back home. And every time grade cards came home, or report cards, hers were all straight A's. Wow, great, good job. Meanwhile, her sibling, who was failing most things, got a few C's, and the family is overwhelmed. Yay, you know, C's. And she's like, "Well, what about my straight A's?" And as an adult looking back on it, she says, "Oh, I understand it. But how do you be totally impartial? Because sometimes one need is so much greater than the other, and the child may feel some level of partiality." It just emphasizes the fact that we have to be so fair and so dedicated to making that happen. And then the last word is sincere, and all around, now we're all the way back to real, pure, where we started in the beginning. This list couldn't only be used for fathers, obviously. It would fit for all human relationships. It also fits for other kinds of categories and situations as well. It ends with verse 18, and I'll read that verse again. "Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness." What would it be like if Dad said, "I want to make sure that this home is peaceful"? And we do that in terms of providing and in terms of protecting. But what about emotionally? "I want this place to be a peaceful place." Last Tuesday, I was conducting a funeral for a man by the name of Gary Boulware, Gertie Boulware's son. Many of you are familiar with that family. And one of the things that struck me about what the family had to say about him is that he was committed to being a peacemaker. And what a wonderful quality that is. Families need unity. Families need consistency. Families need somebody who's working against the division that Satan is trying to sow all of the time. If the patriarch of the family stands up and says, "I'm going to work for peace," what a beautiful and positive situation that is. This morning, in thinking about wisdom, I was pulled so many different directions because there's so much in Scripture that talks about wisdom, but I'm not going in those other directions. And probably right now you can think of a multitude of passages that would fit and be useful, and certainly that's true. For quite a while, for a number of years, I taught a community parenting class. Did it 3 times a year, and most of my students in that class were people who had their children taken away by the Department of Human Services. And in order to go through the process of bringing their kids back into their family, they had to do some education. And so often my classes would be full of those kind of folks. And their perspective was kind of unique at a number of places. I can remember one night talking about marriage situations, and this lady held up her hand and she said, "Are you married?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "How long have you been married?" And at that time it was about 35 years. So I said, "35 years. And she said, "To the same person?" It didn't make any sense at all. We were talking about raising children and the subject of being physical in discipline is a real sensitive one in that situation, as you might well imagine. And I was arguing for other choices. And she said, "I want you to know that I was at a party one night. My father found out where I was. He came over there, dragged me out in the front yard, and beat me in front of everybody. And I respected him for it." And so I did what I always do in that situation. I said, "Tell me about your relationship with that man now." And she said, "Well, I haven't seen him in 15 years. Is that the kind of adult relationship you want to have with your children? This morning, when we think about being a dad, when you think about being a parent, it's not just about surviving those difficult years. It's about not only that heavenly being, but we have this wonderful experience as parents to have a lifelong positive relationship with our kids. The people who become our friends, the people who become our support, the people who not only take care of us physically, but take care of us mentally and spiritually. And encourage us in so many ways. And we look at them and we realize that we're doing this important work. Dad, you're doing this incredibly important work. And you want to do the kind of work that leads that child to the place they want to be with you and part of you and a part of your family for as long as it is. Do you need wisdom? Now, I would suggest this morning that we all do. How do you get it? Well, it's pretty simple. Go back with me to the book of James, just a couple of chapters back. In chapter 1, verses 5 and 6, it says simply, "If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt. Because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind." Probably people who read that passage for the first time go, "It can't be that simple." And yet, is it that simple? God, I need wisdom. The prayer that we pray before we go to bed, but the prayer that we also pray when that child has put us in a situation where we don't know exactly what to do. We can say that quick sentence prayer of, "Lord, give me wisdom. I don't exactly know how to handle this at this moment." God will provide for us wisdom if we use it right and if we respond in the appropriate ways. Dads, we're glad for what you do. We're glad that you're here. We encourage you to continue the fight. We encourage you to continue to do those things that are difficult. And this morning, based on what I'm trying to share this morning, look for that wisdom and look for that heavenly support, that resource that God provides. This morning, we're going to offer an invitation.